All right, good afternoon. We begin Parshas Devarim. We begin Sefer Devarim, the fifth of the five books of the Chumash, which is on page 938. We're actually going to be focused on page 948 if you want to get yourselves ready. But we need to do a little bit of review to get up to where we are up to. This Parsha is this entire Sefer is a speech. It's a 5 weeks' worth of speeches that Moshe gives to the Jewish people, from start to finish, from the beginning of Parshas Devarim until the end of the Sefer. 5 weeks' time go by in which Moshe gives his final last will and testament to the Jewish people. He goes over a number of things that happened in the past, gives us quite a number of new mitzvahs, which we have not yet learned, as he says his final goodbyes to us as our leader. This Parsha is always read prior to Tisha B'Av. It's always read the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, and Vaschana next week is always read after Tisha B'Av. That's an old, old custom. Goes back to the time of the Gaonim, right after the conclusion of the Gemara. So we're talking about 1,400-year-old custom in which we always read Parshas Devarim before Tisha B'Av. There are a couple of reasons given. The most oft-quoted reason is that the beginning of our Parsha is a rebuke, that Moshe gives a rebuke of the Jewish people and all the things that we did wrong over his 40 years of leadership throughout the desert. And it's a veiled rebuke, meaning it doesn't explicitly say everything that we did. But as an example, if you look at the first 2-3 psukim, the Torah gives us the coordinates of where Moshe is when he begins to speak. He was on the other side, just reading the English just to get us a sense of this idea. He was on the other side of the Jordan, concerning the wilderness, concerning the Arabah. He was opposite the Sea of Reeds. He was between Paran and Tophel, and Lavan, and Chatzeros, and Dizahav. In 11 days from Chorev, the sentence itself doesn't even make sense. There is a list of placings where he was. Some of these places don't even exist. We never heard of a place called Paran or Tophel. And so Rashi explains that each one of these places was a reference to something, an error, a mistake, a complaint that the Jews did over their 40 years in the desert. And so that this is a veiled rebuke that Moshe, as he begins his final speech, goes over all the things. Remember, you complained about the man over here, and remember Miriam when she spoke Lashon Hara over here, and remember what you did with the gold, and you make the golden calf over here. And he goes through in veiled responses of everything that is. And so the most common reason why we always read Parshas Devarim prior to Tisha B'Av is for that reason of the Teichacha, the rebuke, the veiled rebuke that's taking place in this Parshas. Moshe gives us a little bit of Musar getting ready for Tisha B'Av. The other reasons that are given, if you look after Moshe goes through a brief synopsis, he goes through in greater detail some of the events that took place. Particularly, he goes through the story of the setting up of judges, in which his father-in-law Yisro saw that Moshe was standing all day long judging the people, and it was going to wear him out, it was going to wear the people out, and he came up with the idea of appointing judges. Moshe goes through that entire episode at greater length. Two comments on that. Number one, as you look on page 942, Pasuk Yud Beis, top of the page there, verse 12, when Moshe's describing this process, he says what happened was, if you flip back one, beginning of verse 9, just go back a page, in which Moshe says, I cannot carry you alone. Lo uchal levadi se'esachem. It's too much. Hashem has blessed you. You've become kekechvei ha'shamayim larov, like the stars of the heavens. And then Moshe says, and now that there are so many of you, echa eseh levadi, how can I carry you by myself? Tarchachem umasachem virivchem, your contentiousness, your burdens, your quarrels. I need judges. I need help. But we read that pasuk that begins with the word Echa, like our Megillah Echa that we'll read. We read that pasuk in the tune of Echa. Echa esolivadi tarchachem umasachem virivchem. Moshe says, I can't handle you. All your fighting and your bickering and your contentiousness, can't do it. So we have to appoint all of these judges. So there's this element of the tune of the Echa that's brought into the Parsha, which is always read right before Tisha B'Av. It was because, you know, that's what you want your leader to say about us at the end of his 40 years, that he says, I couldn't handle you. Couldn't take all your bickering, all your pettiness, all your fighting. So I had to have all these judges help out because I couldn't deal with it. And we read it in the tune of Echa, so we also read that right before Echa. Included within that is when Moshe says, right, the pasuk that we just read, right after that pasuk, when he says, so let's appoint judges, vata'anu osi pasuk yidal, verse 14, you answer, what should a people say when they have a leader like a Moshe Rabbeinu, who was judging them, and he says, forget it, I'm going to put other people in place. So they said, vatomru, tov hadavar asher dibar. Ah, good idea, we like that. Shouldn't be that way. People should have a leader like Moshe that they could have personal connection with. Okay, so you wait online for 2 hours. But you know what? At the end of the line, you speak to Moshe Rabbeinu. And so now I have a quicker way to do it, but you don't get to speak to me. And what was their response? Gevaldik, 2 hours shorter. I love it. So within this story also is a veiled rebuke of the people who were excited about this idea of the appointment of judges, even though all that really did was it put a buffer between them and between Moshe. And as anyone who's ever been a student knows, when you have a professor in the front of the room, in a small room, and the professor, the Rebbe, the teacher, whoever, can look at you and call on you, we don't like that. And if there's a buffer that's placed, and all of a sudden you end up in this huge lecture hall, 500 people, and they're, okay, this is how I am comfortable in this situation, that's nice. I don't have to deal directly with the authority figure. So there's a good and a bad. The good is you don't have to deal with the offender. The bad is you don't get to deal with the authority figure. So if it's just a bad person, that's nice. But if it's a Moshe Rabbeinu, so then it wasn't such a positive that everybody was so excited about this.
I was distracted before. Didn't Yisro, is this the same thing with Yisro? When he came and told him you're taking on too much, you should.
Yes, that's what we're talking about.
So this is it?
Yes.
Okay, I thought there was another song.
So that's the, that Moshe goes through that. So there's another reason why we read this particular week, as we describe that pasuk that begins with Eicha. Then we get to the bottom of that page. Moshe goes into the story of the spies, and he goes into this also in greater length, beginning in pasuk Yud Tes on the bottom, verse 19, on the bottom of page 942, that we traveled from Chorev and we were ready to go. Hashem was ready to give us the land, except we decided, you came to me, Vatikrevun Eli Kulchem, you all came to me in pasuk Chof Beis 22, and you said, let's send Anoshim Lefaneinu, let's send some people before us, and they're going to spy out the land. And again, that same theme Moshe here says about himself. And I said, it's a good idea. Both of these terrible calamities that we describe in the beginning of the parsha have that element in which when I said, let's appoint the judges, you said, great idea. And when you said to me, let's send spies, I said, great idea. And they both ended up, the judges wasn't so terrible, but the spies, of course, was a terrible episode. Moshe describes, again, one of the great studies, if you want to do Devarim, is you could study the story of the spies as it happened with this accounting here and compare and contrast the way the Torah records it 40 years later. That's not for us this afternoon. That story ends with Moshe saying, because of that, we were decreed to wander for 40 years. You then said to me that you want to ascend. Let's take the land that Hashem has given us. And I said to you, too late. You missed the window. Hashem is not with you. Do not go. And if you look on the bottom of the page, the Torah describes that they went anyway, and they were struck down before their enemies for going, even though it was decreed that they should not go. Do not ascend. Do not do battle. And pasuk Mem Beis. Now skipping to the end of that part. Page 946, Mem Beis. Vayomer Hashem Eli, Emor Lehem Lo Ta'alu V'Lo Tilachamu, Ki Aneni Bekir Bechem. Hashem said to me to tell you, don't go up and fight. I'm not with them. It's not the right time. However, V'Lo Shematem, you did not listen to me. V'Tamru Espi Hashem, you went up. V'Yetzeho Emori, so the Emori came out and they smote you, and you had to flee from before them. Vateshavu vativku lifnei Hashem. You sat, you cried, but Hashem did not listen to your voice, did not hear you, and we dwelled in Kadesh many days. All of these references, again, the idea that we cried before Hashem and He didn't listen, that theme comes up in the keynotes that we're going to say on Tisha B'Av, in the Megillah of Eicha. Like, where are you? We're crying. So this story was, Hashem said, I told you not to go. I told you not to fight. That window was closed. You messed up with the spies. And they said, no, we're ready now. Moshe said to them, I know you're ready now, but Hashem's not ready now. It's too late. And you went anyway, and you were struck down, and now you're sitting and crying, and Hashem didn't hear you. All of these are references to episodes in Jewish history that have taken us through. It's just an interesting point. If you would have been there at that time, if you were one of the enemy, if you were the Emori who struck down the Jews, you didn't know that Hashem told them not to go, and they went anyway, they would just see themselves as the mighty Emori who were attacked by this Jewish nation that came out of Egypt, and we beat them. And look, now they're stuck in the desert, but that's only knowing half the story. The enemies are always just on the other side of the equation. They were never supposed to have waged that war to begin with. And all of this gets us up to the pasuk that I want to discuss with you this afternoon. A fascinating pasuk. That brings us up to Perek Beis. So Moshe's given us a little bit of a synopsis. He's told us he's going to teach us one last time, which he's going to do in a couple parakim, a couple chapters later. He's going to begin actually teaching us, but he was just reviewing now. And now he gets into his review. He went through, as we did, the judges, he went through the spies, and then we sat there many days, he said. Vanefen Vanisa Midbar, beginning of the Perek Beis, second chapter, page 948. We turned and journeyed to the wilderness toward the Sea of Reeds. Kasher Diber Hashem Elai. Vanosav Eshar Seir Yamim Rabim. And we circled Mount Seir for many days. What's this a reference to? We are a long time in the desert, really just going in
around
in circles, going around. We're lost. Not lost like we don't know where we are. We're directionless because here we know where we need to go, but it's 40 years' time until we get there. And so he describes. So that's what we did. We headed off into the wilderness toward Derech Yam Suf. Now again, Derech Yam Suf is in which direction? That's the direction that they came from. They left the Yam Suf when they left Mitzrayim. All of these episodes, the judges, the spies, and now they turn back towards the Yam Suf, and the Torah describes, we went around Mount Seir, you know, many, many days. Yomim Rabim. And then, Vayomer Hashem Elai Lemor, Hashem says to me, saying, Rav lachem soy vesahar has enough. Enough of the circling of this mountain. Pnu lachem tzafona. Go and turn tzafona. What does tzafona mean?
North.
Go north. Go north. Go north. Now, in this one pasuk, we fast forwarded 38 years. We went through all of the 38 years of wandering. And now we're going to head towards the land. And in order to head towards the land, we need to deal with the nations that we're not allowed to attack along the way. And so as you see on the left-hand side of your page, Moshe is going to describe Esav and Seir, that you're going to pass through their boundary, be very careful with them, do not provoke them, for I have not given you their land. We're going to describe Moab in the beginning of Pasuk Tes, verse 9, in which again Hashem says, do not distress Moab, do not provoke them, I will not give you their land as an inheritance. And then we begin in verse Yud Zayin, Pasuk 17, how we're actually going to enter into the land. So this, where we're up to, all of that is just a brief synopsis of where we are up to. 38 years now. Pat, now we're getting our march towards the land of Israel. Don't touch Esav and Seir. Don't touch Moab. Here's the land. These are the way we are going to go in order to get to where we need to go. Sages are very troubled by this language of Rav Lechem Soy Vesahar Hazeh. Hashem says, it's enough. You circled this mountain enough times. Go north. And they describe on the maps and the simple meaning of going north in terms of being able to get to where they need to go to cross over, working it through the nation of the Esav, where Seir is and where Edom and where Moab is, in terms of exactly why that's north. But they see in this a far deeper detail than just this go north. So the Medrash says as follows. Let me just give one word of introduction. That the sages see that in this idea, this verse of circling the mountain, is the verse of how to address the years of exile. The years of circling around. Our 2,000-year exile is in a way, a mini Midbar experience. We don't have the Mun, we don't have Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't have the good parts of the desert, we have just the forever wandering, knowing where it is that we need to end up, That's very clear. We could point to it on the map, and yet taking us forever to get there, and just every couple generations moving from one stop to another stop and to another stop, and every generation thinking, oh, this is where it's going to be good for us. And then it just, we, you know, move along from one place to another. So that idea, you've circled enough, go north, is an insight, a hint on that which we read Parshas Devarim always before Tisha B'Av, how to manage the exile. Says the Medrash, Amr Lahem, it's as if Hashem said to us, Imri'isem ososhim mevakesh lehizgariz bochem, if you see that these nations, Esav, Seir, Moab, that we're about to read, that we're going to circle around their lands as we get to the land, are coming to attack you. They're coming to cause you trouble. We are in the exile of Edom right now. The exile, the four exiles of the Jewish people were destined to go through. We are in the fourth and final exile, which is known as the exile of Edom, the children of Esav, or Western society, Rome and their descendants. That's the exile that we're in right now. If you see that they're coming to attack you, Al tamdu kenegdo, do not stand against them. Do not try to take the brunt of that attack head on. That's not how you're going to manage. Ella hitzpinu atzmechem mimenu. Again, what did the Torah say? What direction should you turn? Safon, north. Well, what does the word safun or tsafon also mean? To hide. Where do we see that? Give you a hint, Pesach Seder. Tzafun bore. What's tzafun? Tafikomen. That's hidden away towards the end of the meal. Because tzafun means something which is hidden. It also means north. So the Medrash picks up the fact that Hashem uses this language to Moshe. You've circled the mountain enough. Turn north is a reference. What are you turning north from? To avoid the nation, the next, we didn't read it inside. The next, v'yasa'am, atem ovrim b'gvul acheichem b'nei Esav ha'yoshrim b'seir. Verse 4, you're about to pass the boundaries of your brother, the children of Esav, who dwell in Seir. V'yir'u mekam, they will fear you, v'nishmartem ma'od, but you should be careful. Al tisgoru bam, do not provoke them, because I'm not giving you them their land. So go north to go around their land. So the Medrash says, this is the key. When they come to attack you, Seir, Edom, the exile that you're in, don't take it on head on, but not go north, but tzafun, hitzpinu atzmachem, hide yourself. Ad shia avor olomo, until it passes over. What does that mean? So there are approaches to the Jew in the exile. How does a Jew handle himself in exile? So one of the major approaches is avoid all conflict. Just stay under the radar as best as possible. This sentiment is most expressed by the survivors and the generations that grew up with survivors in the home that said, just stay out of everybody's way. Try not to be noticed, try not to be seen, and do your best. And it's rooted in Yaakov Avinu, when his sons Shimon and Levi wiped out the city of Shechem after they abducted his daughter Dinah. And Yaakov gets very angry at them. And he says, what's going to be with me and all of my neighbors? They're all now going to hate me, and they're going to want to attack me. And this was the wrong thing. I'm new here. Bad idea. And the Ramban there, we learned this, we spoke about this when we covered this last year in the Parsha, said that's the Jewish approach of you're not in your home. This is not your land. You're in exile. Just stay low. Stay under the radar. Don't be noticed. Hitzpinu atzmachem. Keep yourself hidden to be avoided, you should not be detected, and stay. That's the way you should handle it until the time comes when it passes over. The Netziv, the Kliyakar, was a Kabbalist, I forgot exactly, I think 17th century, I forgot, writes in his commentary, wrote a very classic commentary in Chumash, writes on this Medrash and on this Pasuk, an example of this. He says that this pasuk is yesh bo remez l'sha'av l'doros. This pasuk has hints to us how to live, not just during the time that Moshe was speaking to his generation of the desert, but to us as well, all future generations. Inyan siv of this idea of circling around the mountain is yamim rabim liyisrael shu'nadim v'noyim svivu. And is our journeys, Nav v'nad ba'aretz, that's the language, he's borrowing the language that Hashem said to Cain after Cain killed his brother Hevel. He said, you're going to be a wanderer in the land without getting any rest. You'll never be able to settle. So that's us. Noyim v'nadim ba'aretz, we travel from here to there. We wander around all of these years going around, around in circles until the final redemption will happen. And as long as that is, Pnu lachem tzvona, turn north, as he quotes the Medrash that we just read, that when Esav comes to attack you, hide yourself. This is the way that the Kli Yakar understands us. Shem Yimtso Ha'isha Yisraeli Begolos. If a Jew finds himself in exile, Hatzlocha Ze'irsham. And he finds himself tremendously successful. He does well. As Yatzminu V'Yatzpinu Akol Bifnei Esav. Do not flaunt your success in front of your non-Jewish hosts that you're in their country. Because no one like Esav is as jealous of the Jews. Because according to Esav and his descendants, Hakol gzula biyada mehem, everything we have is stolen from them, dating back to when Yaakov took the bracha from Esav. From that moment, everything that we have that was supposed to be mine, says Esav. And then, fast forward throughout history, when a Jew ends up in the land of Esav, we are in the galus of Esav right now, and his matzliach, says the Kli Yakar, succeeds. You want to flaunt your spiritual wealth, geigus and tehet. You want to flaunt your material wealth in front of he who's a descendant of someone who says, you stole that from me. Hitzpinu, make sure you keep it hidden. And that's why he writes, Alkein tziva davkal Esav pnu lechem tzfoina shelo yiskanu. That's why specifically in this paragraph of Esav, not the next paragraphs of Moab or Yishma, it's Esav that Moshe says, turn north, remez to, hint to, hide yourself, because Esav is filled with that kina. And then he gives Musar. V'zehefech mimashi Yisrael oisim bidoros halalu be'artzos oyvehem. And this is the opposite of what our generation is doing in the lands of our enemies. Kimish yesh lo mana, someone who has $100, who maris atzmo b'malbushe kavod, he makes sure that he dresses himself in a way to show what he has. Ubatim sfunim, beautiful big houses, v'chashuvim, kilu haylo kamalofim, he builds a house as if he has 1,000 when he really only has 100. Umigarim ha'umos ba'atzmam. And therefore, the nations, the host nations, grind their teeth and growl at these visitors in their midst. And the Jew has violated this pasuk of Pnu Lachem Tzfona. Hamaskilim Yavinu Likach Musar. He who understands, he says, will understand and take Musar. That is not the approach of a Jew in exile. And that is hinted at from this phrase of Pnu Lachem Tzfona. You may not flaunt in an exile of an Esav that which he feels was taken from him. That is that. The Medrash continues. That's the first opinion in the Medrash that says, what does it mean? Tzfona, hide yourself. Continues the Medrash. Second opinion. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shalom. Amr lo Yisrael. Yisrael says back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ribbono Shel Olam, I don't understand. You want us to hide ourselves? How can we do that? Aviv mevarcho al charbucha tichya. Yitzchak Avinu gave Esav a bracha. When Esav said, "Nu, don't you have anything left?" He said, "Al charbucha tichya, you'll live by the sword. You're going to live by the sword." Klal Yisrael says to Hashem, okay, well now they're attacking us. You're telling us just to like turn away and hide. You're agreeing with Yitzchak, and we should just hide. Lahecha Nivra, where can we run? They're going to pursue us. They're going to catch us. We mean just that's all you told. You gave him a sword, and then you just told us to hide. What kind of protection is that? What are we supposed to do? Says the Medrash, if they come and attack us. Amar lahem, imri isim shemizdavig lachem. So if you see that they're attacking you, barchu la Torah, run to the Torah. Ve'ein tzafona el Torah. The word of turn tzafon is not to be interpreted turn to hiding. It should be interpreted to turn to Torah. As the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Yitzpon la Yesharim Toshia, and the Gemara Darshan's, the Medrash understands the word Yitzpon is a burying oneself in the study of Torah.
So if you're being attacked, just turn
to
Torah?
So the Gemara's, the Medrash is not saying like while you're being attacked to learn, it's saying the way that a Jew protects himself and manages in the exile is through burying himself in the study of Torah.
I have a question. Hashem does everything right, correct? Why Hashem would give that bracha with the sword that he knows what's going to come? We will always be attacked by them, always.
Yeah. There's no short answer. In other words, you're asking a question that touches on the good question of the 2,000-year exile. What is the meaning and the purpose of that which we've gone through and all of the trials, all this, the suffering and the bloodshed, and all the meaning of that? That's like, yeah, it's way beyond, you know, the Ramban comments already that when Sarah was harsh to Hagar and her child Yishmael, that was the cause that the Yishmaelite nation would cause tzaras to the Jewish people throughout all of history. That's the Ramban says that. And Esav is here. We have the whole combination of Esav was a Jew born of Yitzchak and Rivka, and who was...
But Sarah never did an Aveira.
What do you mean she never did an Aveira?
It wasn't say that she never did an Aveira.
The Ramban says not like that.
Oh, okay.
Ramban says not
like that.
Who said she never did an Avera?
I thought wasn't she the one that never did an Avera?
I don't know.
Guess not.
Hey, it could be. I'm not familiar with that. So that's the touch on all of Jewish history. Why is there such trauma and tragedy throughout the history? Like, what is its meaning for us and significance?
That's
the way that it should be. That's like saying, you know, take your child and throw her out for 10 years and say, grow up on your own, come back to me when you're 40, and say, you'll appreciate me better then. What kind of parent does that to a child? So that you can appreciate me more? I want you at home. That's what I want. I don't want you out so that you'll pine for me. I want you to be with me. So that's nice, but that doesn't justify, you know, we're going to sit on the floor and cry on Tisha B'Av, and we've done that for 2,000 years because it's a bad thing. And it's a painful thing, and all the suffering that we've gone through is, indescribable. So the Medrash here presents these two approaches as to how to understand turn north. One approach is just stay under the radar screen. Just avoid everything. And the other approach is, we should do nothing? The Medrash, no. The Medrash is giving you, the Pasuk is giving you a tool that you'll have to survive. Hold yourself in learning. Make sure you're connected to the Torah, you hold on to the Torah. If you hold on to it, that will maintain you through this long, arduous exile. And that's the only way to protect yourself from the exile. I want to just conclude with one point. I can't remember. I think we've spoken about this before, but this idea that we spoke about, that Yaakov Avinu trying to stay under the radar screen, the first opinion of the Medrash that says stay under the radar screen, it is an approach. Somebody asked me recently that there have been a number of anti-Semitic events here in Montreal, in Canada, around the world, which is nothing new. And as always, there are the different voices that say, should we be fighting back? Should we be wearing our kippah and our yarmulke out in public and like, you know, we're ready? Or wear a cap and just try to avoid the whole thing and stay away and under the radar, and I don't want to go to the police, and I just want it all to... Which approach is right? And we see there's clear precedent for the approach of just stay under the radar screen. And during the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, when the Romans were laying a siege on Yerushalayim, the Gemara records that there were these same two camps that existed during those days as well. There was the camp of those who said, we have enough food to last us several years. We're going to wait them out. Literally, it's spina. We're going to just hide ourselves and wait them out. Eventually, the Romans are going to get bored. They're going to go find something else to do rather than deal with this one little city of Jerusalem. And they'll go deal with other things. They'll go away. And there was another group that said, we need to fight them. We need to go out and fight and conquer and protect ourselves. And the Gemara records that these two warring factions amongst the Jewish people couldn't get together to figure out what they were going to do. So the group that wanted to fight took matters into their own hands, and they burned down all of the storehouses of grain and food that had been stored up. And they did that to say, you see, now we're going to fight. Now we have no choice because you don't have your 3 years, so let's go fight. And instead what happened was a famine, a horrific famine, swallowed up the city. And the descriptions of Josephus and the Midrashim and the Gemaras and what we're going to read is just disgusting of the terrible famine. And when they needed to fight, they had no resources to fight. And that was the end of the Second Commonwealth. That was the end of the Second Beis HaMikdash and the destruction of the Jewish people. And it came about because these two camps of what should we do? Should we wait it out or should we fight? Two camps. But they fought amongst themselves, and the camp that said we're going to fight basically destroyed themselves in trying to win their side of the equation. And these two camps have always existed. These two camps have always existed. You know, we can fast forward 2,000 years to the Holocaust, and those who just try to hide and let it pass over and survive, and those who said we need to fight back. And there's no right or wrong. When I was on the march, we dealt with both sides. You know, we dealt with those who, in fighting back, if your fighting back meant abandoning your family because you were running out to the woods and the partisans, so what's right, to abandon your own elderly parents and run into the woods, or to take care of them and hope? There's no right or wrong in such situations. So that's just a simple example that, you know, came up, you know, on our trip. And you know, if you run away and they take 10 other people in your place, you know, there's no simple solution. But the idea of being, as we said, defensive and just trying to avoid or confront has always been, you know, two camps with no simple answer. I think it's worth just stating as we enter into Tisha B'Av, that we're in a fascinating period of Jewish history in which the 2,000-year primary approach of the Jew has always been just lay low and try to stay out of anyone's attention and move to the next place if you have to. There have always been those who wanted to fight. But for 2,000 years, we have been overwhelmingly, I think our DNA is just like, you know, this too shall pass, just try to survive and get out of this. In the last 70 years, that's flipped on its head. Literally. It didn't happen overnight, but now looking back over 7 years, it has. With the creation of the state, which was born out of the ash of the Holocaust, and the imagery of like sheep to the slaughter, came the idea of a nation that's powerful, a nation that fights, a nation that is armed, a nation that is technologically advanced, a nation that is leading the world in so many ways and is a powerful force in the region and in the world. and that doesn't sit back and deal with things. That is a fighting force, and an identifiable one. The Jew in the exile is just an individual living in a host country who can try to, like, you know, stay under a rock and maybe nobody will notice. Doesn't work when you're a country. Doesn't work when you have the name, you have a flag in the midst of the UN, which is overwhelmingly Arab. When you live in the Middle East with a bunch of bad neighbors, there's no hiding. There's no lay low and maybe this will pass. It doesn't work. And it's given rise to an entire generation, a generation of young Israelis who were born and raised by Israeli parents, 70 years already, who don't have this mentality of many of us in the exile, especially descended from survivors, of just like, don't make any noise. Like, if you're quiet, they'll go away. The Israeli culture doesn't have that mentality at all. Doesn't have it. It's, we're going to fight back and hit them harder than they hit us. That's how you survive in the Middle East. And just looking at the Jewish world right now, it's just a fascinating, I don't have any comment on it other than just describing what I see, just what I see as, we still have the exiled Jew, who, especially those of us descended from survivors, I find, have that mentality. I think a lot of us in exile still just this, just try not to make noise, and hopefully it will pass, and everything will be okay. And the Israeli Jew, who is raised with, I'm going to the army, from the moment they can begin to speak. That's the plan. We're going to go and fight. I'm going to take up arms. It might be called the Israeli Defense Forces. We're going to defend ourselves. And if that means being proactive and going into Iraq, Iran, that's what we're going to do. And it's a different mentality. There always were two mentalities. Shimon and Levi take up arms, wipe out an entire city, and Yaakov says, you're making too much noise. And they said, what, we're going to let our sister be treated like a harlot? So they said, we're going to, this is what we're going to do. And Yaakov said, too much noise, you're making, they're going to get me in trouble. And we had in the times of the second base of Mikdash, those who said, just wait it out, we'll be fine, we have enough food, they'll go away. And others who said, they're not going to go away, they're threatening us, fight them. That ended in a disaster because they couldn't get along. And we have that today. You have that, you'll see the mentality of as things happen around the world, the mentality of, okay, so put on a cap. If you have to put on a cap, you put on a cap. You don't wear a yarmulke in public, and that's no big deal. Just get through to the next stage. And those, you hear the voices loud and clear today who say, absolutely not. That's not how we're going to be. And it's, you know, it's we're watching this generational shift that's coming out of the land of Israel, the pride, the power, the force that says you can't, state of Israel can't hide. And it's just amazing to me to watch. I'm just not commenting on it other than just describing. Just amazing to watch those different mentalities of a generation that was grew up in the homes of survivors and the generation that grew up in the home of Israeli fighters. And it's a different world. And the Medrash says, in any case, as we read, the one thing that everybody agrees will take us to the next step is Hitzpinu Atzmachem B'Torah. Bury yourself in the study of Torah. That is our protection, our eternal protection always, to survive the difficulties that we have, whether it's through hiding or through fighting. But that is certainly the key that takes us from one generation to the next, and eventually will bring us, as the Medrash concludes, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Himtinu Ad Achshav Melech HaMashiach Lavo. We'll wait. Melech HaMashiach will indeed come, and be Mekayim HaTov Marav Tuvelcha. How great and good is your goodness to us, as we will seek that final redemption as we enter into Tisha B'Av, may be. Not just that we don't, God willing, we won't have a Tisha B'Av this year, but if in 2 days Mashiach has not come, our final Tisha B'Av before return to Eretz Yisrael. All right, a good Shabbos, everyone.